Good morning, everyone. I have the pleasure to be the first one to speak. And I will be talking about parallel programming for the web. And quite inevitably, I will be talking a lot about JavaScript. So I thought I'd start off this talk with giving you a really, really supple introduction to JavaScript and what I've come to learn about it since I started looking into it. So the first thing to note is it's not Java. And I still quite often hear that. It's getting less and less because JavaScript's becoming more popular. But as it shares part of the name, people really instantly think, oh, Java, yeah, I know that. It has nothing to do with Java apart from sharing four letters and a little bit of syntax, maybe. So what it really is, it's a nice blend of programming paradigms. And there's a little bit in that bag for everyone. So you have object orientation with prototypes. There's no classes. There's no nominal subtyping or any of these very rigid structures you would find in Java. Instead, you have prototypes. So it's a very dynamic version of object orientation. You have higher-order functions and first-class function objects. So that will cater for everyone that's more in the functional programming community. So if you like that level of abstraction, JavaScript is for you too. And a very important point is it's dynamically typed other than Java, and it's interpreted. And I know there are JITs that compile JavaScript in the browser, obviously. But deep down, from the principle of the language, it's an interpreted language. And that means at any time, if you run something in your browser, you can just break into debugger, change the code a little bit, change your runtime environment, and go on executing. So you get this very kind of fluid way of developing programs. And that's quite unique to JavaScript. It's a very, very dynamic way of writing. Another very important point is it's a very safety security focused language because it was designed for the web. So JavaScript was built specifically to run inside of a browser, to run scripts that are downloaded from a web page. And if you do that, you have to make sure that the thing is as safe and secure as you can make it. Because the user that uses his web browser has no control over what kind of code is executed on his machine. You just go to a website, the code is downloaded and instantly run without you noticing. So it uses a fully managed runtime. You don't have pointers. There cannot be any overflows, except the implementation is wrong. But language-wise, all that is prohibited. And lastly, a very important point, it's designed for portability. And they take that really serious in JavaScript. So everything that could be machine-dependent is hidden, be it number formats, underlying hardware, instruction set, all that's gone. It even goes to the point that source code is shipped as your language representation. So if you go to a website, you download the real source code of the application, and then it's jitted and executed on your client. There's no bytecodes, there's no nothing. It's a really open, very portable platform. So that's JavaScript as I see it. Now, I want to talk about parallel programming for the web, parallel programming in JavaScript. I think the first thing to do is to kind of look at the status quo. So what's there? How does parallel programming in JavaScript work? And when I started and we started this work and looked at JavaScript, there really wasn't any parallel programming means. And I thought, well, this is a fully sequential language. But I looked a little closer and I realized, actually, JavaScript developers are really good in writing concurrent programs because they have this execution model in the web browser where they use cooperative multitasking. The UI thread that runs your browser experience and the scripts share the same execution unit. They share the same thread. So if you write a JavaScript program, you have to make sure that your scripts are not running too long, because that will lock up the browser UI. So quite naturally, JavaScript developers have developed this programming style where they decompose all their scripts in really small asynchronous callback functions so that they can create this impression for the user that actually the browser and the JavaScript scripts run concurrently, whereas in reality, they don't. So JavaScript programmers are really good in writing concurrent programs in that sense. However, they come to expect a scenario where everything is fully deterministic because they live in this really, really nice world where they have a guarantee that their script always runs to completion before anyone else can interfere with the global state. So all the nastiness of concurrent programming, all these race conditions, they don't have. Well, there's a drawback to all this, of course, because at the end, there is no concurrent execution. So they write concurrent programs, but the runtime completely sequentializes everything, and it's still cooperative multitasking. It's still one thing running at a time. So that's what we set out to change. We wanted to actually bring real concurrent programming to JavaScript. Now you could say, yet again, why yet another Perl programming API? Why yet another Perl programming paradigm? Why do it again? So many people have done it before. There are so many languages that do it. And the point I'm putting forward here is that JavaScript is sufficiently different that it's worthwhile to re-examine all these design decisions, to explore the design space once more and find out whether maybe if you design it for JavaScript, you end up with something that's quite different to all the things that are there already. And that's what we set out to do, and that's what we did over the last 1.5 years. So what are the design considerations you have to make if you design parallel programming for JavaScript? What's the things you have to think about? Firstly, ease of use. And this might sound like obvious, but in JavaScript, this is really, really more important than in any other language. Because Brent Naik, the CTO of Mozilla, and at the same time inventor of JavaScript, he recently at FluentConf gave a keynote, and there he said, when they designed JavaScript, they really meant it to be a language for designers, beginners, amateur programmers. So it's really a language meant for people that do not want to pursue a degree in computer science to create a web application. What they want is they want to take some code, combine it in a new way, and produce a web app. That's the target audience. And I believe if you design a parallel programming language, you have to keep your target audience in mind. So we had to make it really, really easy to use. Another thing that's quite particular to JavaScript, there's this mashup style of programming on the web. As all the code is shipped essentially in source, everybody can look at everybody else's code. And that has created an environment where people will just look at existing codes and mesh them up, combine them in new things. So if you design a parallel programming language, you have to support this programming model. You have to allow people to take code that's sequential, written by somebody else, but use it in a parallel context. So ease of use is central to the language design. Secondly, you have to be platform independent. As I said, JavaScript already is platform independent. But if you add parallel programming, this platform independence gets a new twist. Because you have to be able to run your parallel codes on every kind of architecture. And in particular, that means you have to run it on non-parallel architectures too. So your parallel code better runs reasonably efficient sequentially as it does parallel. Also, you have to support all kinds of architectures. So your client device might have a multi-core CPU. There might be SIMD instructions available. You might even have a programmable GPU in that device. So whatever the programmer writes, you have to be able, as a runtime, to run that reasonably efficiently on all kinds of different client hardwares. And that's a major design criterion as well, which is quite unique to the open web, I believe. And lastly, you have to be suitable for the open web. And that there's two points hidden in this. Firstly, you have to be safe and secure. So you have to meet all the promises that JavaScript already makes about safety. You cannot introduce any new attack surface, because that instantly will kill your approach. Nobody will put that into a browser if it's not safe. And secondly, you have to make it such that it's reasonably easy to implement. Remember, JavaScript is implemented by all browser vendors. And if you want to convince them to implement something new, a parallel programming API, you have to convince them that's a reasonable effort they have to put in, that it's worth to do. And if you require a lot of work to implement your programming approach, it will be a really, really hard sell. So we had to design something that was reasonably easy to implement. And the real challenge behind all these things is you still want it to perform well. So these design criteria do not list performance anywhere. But of course, if you do parallel programming approaches, your underlying cause really is to get to the performance of your parallel hardware. And this is a goal in our work too, but meeting these design criteria is obviously the most important part. So how do you manage to get good performance and meet these design criteria? So we had to make a range of design choices. Firstly, we wanted to have performance portability. Then we wanted to have a deterministic execution model. Also, we wanted to support mashup coding, and we wanted to maintain the safety and security of JavaScript. So those were the four important design goals we had in mind when we made our decisions. So what decisions have we made based on this? Well, how do you achieve performance portability? We all know if you've ever written, say, a parallel reduction, the way you implement it really, really depends on the target architecture you want to execute it on. So if you have a GPU, you will use quite a different algorithm than if you want to do it on a multi-core. So if you want to enable performance portability, if you want to have a chance as a runtime to be performance portable, you need high-level abstractions. And that's why we ended up with high-level parallel patterns. Those describe the structure of the parallelism, and then the runtime can decide how to efficiently map that onto the available hardware. We wanted to have a deterministic execution model, and the obvious way to achieve that is to disallow side effects on shared state. And that's the route we went. So in our programming model, there are never any side effects on shared state. Shared state is immutable during parallel execution. Also, another twist, we require operators and reductions to be commutative and associative. And that allows us to reorder computations arbitrarily to achieve parallel execution. Of course, we can't do magic here. So the floating point issues still are there. If you reorder floating point operations, the result might change. But you know, there's nothing you can do about that. But on the higher level, we require these properties so that we can safely reorder computations without changing the outcome. How do you support mashup coding? Well, if you want to be able to take sequential code and just use it in a parallel environment, it has to be the same language. So all the code, even with our extension, is just still pure JavaScript. We haven't added any new features to the language. If it looks like JavaScript, it will behave like JavaScript. There are certain things you cannot do during parallel execution, like mutating global state, so that is disallowed. But if you do something that is legal, it will behave exactly the same way during parallel execution as it would during sequential execution. And that's a key point to enable mashup coding. Also, this really, really lowers the learning curve because people already know JavaScript, so this is easy to pick up. And how do you maintain safety and security? We just stay within the same runtime. We have a fully managed runtime. There's no pointers visible. There's automatic memory management. So all those techniques JavaScript uses, we reuse. And this is really central, because if you promise safety, it's a much easier sell for people to pick it up. So these are the design choices we made. Next question, of course, is what does the language look like? So if you make these choices, where do you end? So let me talk a little about the Ribbon-Tray API, our actual language extension we ended up with. And we've chosen a three-pillar approach. So in essence, we added three things to the JavaScript language. If you want to be really precise, we really only added one single thing to the language, which is a new data structure, this parallel array. Parallel array is just an ordinary JavaScript object, like any other JavaScript object. It has a similar semantics to ordinary JavaScript arrays with three major differences. Firstly, it's immutable. So we have a programming model where once you've computed a result, a parallel array, you can no longer change it. You always compute new results. And we do that because that allows us optimizations in the runtime system, which otherwise would be harder to implement. So this is a design choice to make the implementation easier. Then arrays are dense. So in JavaScript, you have this interesting property that an array can have holes. And that means that your iteration spaces would have holes. And we don't want that, because it makes it harder for programmers to reason about what a program does. And again, it makes it harder to implement. So we say, OK, they are dense. And lastly, they're homogeneous. And with homogeneous, we mean if you have a multi-dimensional parallel array, it has a rectangular shape. So say if you have a vector of vectors, all inner vectors must have the same length. And again, this simplifies the implementation to quite a degree, and it makes it easier to reason about what the program does for the programmer. So here's a line of code. This is how you would create a parallel array. You just pass it an existing JavaScript array, and you get back an immutable copy of it. We have other ways of creating parallel arrays, of course. We have a comprehension constructor, which essentially allows you to define each element of the array as a function of the index at that position, which is then computed parallel. It's probably the most versatile construct we have for array creation. But what we have also is we have a range of methods that allow you to derive new parallel arrays from existing parallel arrays. And these will look all mostly very familiar, because they are the basic skeletons you use for parallel programming. We have map, reduce, scan, filter, scatter. The only thing that might not be familiar is the combine here. which in essence is a special version of map that's multidimensional and indexed. Probably there are many more you could implement, but we've picked these six because we believe they are good enough to implement most use cases. And again, this is to make the implementation easy. We don't want to implement tens, twenties of different operators. So they all typically create a freshly minted parallel array, except for reduction, of course, which creates a single element. The third thing we add is elemental functions. And if you ever did CUDA or OpenCL, you will know the same concept as a kernel function. These are just purely JavaScript functions. There's nothing special about them, except for one thing. They're not supposed to have side effects. If they have a side effect, the runtime will throw. So that's the contract we have with the programmer. You supply us this method, and it doesn't have side effects, and therefore we can run it in parallel. Let me give you another example. This is what a map, for instance, looks like in JavaScript. So you have your parallel array here, and you call map on it, and you give it this elemental function, which in essence is the increment. So you get the value, and you return the value plus one. And this line is, even in existing JavaScript, it's valid. So if this wasn't a parallel array, but just a JavaScript array, you could already write that code today. So programmers are really familiar with that concept. What we add here, though, is as this is a parallel array, the programmer promises that this function won't have any side effects. So we can throw if it does have side effects because he invalidated that contract. That's essentially what we've added. Let me give you a slightly more elaborate example just to give you a flavor of what it looks if people write code that way. So this is a very simple image processing kernel, which takes an image and produces a grayscale version of it. So this pixel data here in green would be your parallel array. And you typically, in JavaScript, you would get that from a canvas element, an image on your web page. And then you apply this function to grayscale, which I haven't listed it here, which takes each pixel and produces a grayscale value out of that pixel. So after this map, you will have a parallel array, a freshly minted parallel array with grayscale values. You simply apply another map to it, which is this 2RGB alpha function here, that takes the color, the grayscale value, and produces an RGB and alpha value out of it. So it's a very simple thing to write. This now can be executed concurrently. And you can, you know, imagine all the standard optimizations you would typically do, like fusing these kernels and all these things. So all that is possible with this programming approach. But it's still very approachable to programmers. So that's the language design. Of course, if you have designed a language, the next question is, can we get performance out of it? And to answer that, we've implemented a prototype. Because we wanted to know, even though this is very high level, can we get reasonable performance? To make this a prototype implementation easy, we've taken a route that is a very, very shallow embedding of our prototype into Firefox. So what we do is, during script execution in the JavaScript engine, if the programmer has written a call to map or to combine, we intercept that call and start our RevTrail compiler. And that compiler is written in JavaScript itself. So it runs in the normal JavaScript engine. And what that compiler does, it does the typical things you would do to compile a dynamically typed language. So you first do some type inference. We really radically specialize for the input values because we are at runtime. So we know exactly what the arguments are to our method call. So we can specialize for that. We do representation analysis. We do a static memory allocation. We do bounce check animation, all the things you typically do in these compilers. In the end, we have an OpenCL kernel. And we've chosen OpenCL because that gives us an easy route to have a backend that executes our code. Probably if you implement this as a real production implementation, you might write your own JIT that compiles directly to binary. But for the prototype, we've chosen OpenCL because that allows us to hook it up with an OpenCL runtime, which will then execute this OpenCL kernel on multi-core CPUs, using vector units, on GPUs, whatever is available. In the end, we pick up the result we got from this execution, inject that back into the JavaScript engine, and resume execution. So that's how basically our prototype works. With that prototype, we have seen quite good performance results. So we've implemented one application, which is our placeholder for a web application, which is this particle simulation running inside of a web browser. So it simulates 4,000 particles floating in space. It's the Owen squared n-body implementation. And as you can see here, it scales quite nicely with the number of threads. Of course, there's this jump here between one and two threads. And the reason for that is one thread, that's the standard JavaScript implementation. Whereas with two threads, we switch to RabbitTrail. And we do have a jitting advantage. So our JIT is slightly better than the JavaScript JIT. So that's where this jump comes from. But from two threads onwards, this is scaling up to the point where rendering becomes the bottleneck and not computing anymore. So this scales quite nicely. You can try it yourself if you go to this URL with Firefox and just run it in your browser. An argument I often hear is, OK, this is you compare JavaScript with JavaScript. Maybe JavaScript itself is so slow that optimizing and making it parallel is so easy. So to answer that, we looked at another result. We did matrix-matrix multiply. And the point here really was to show that, yes, JavaScript is slower than if you implement the same thing in C, but still, we get speedups if we run it in parallel array version in JavaScript. And this is on a dual core, so this speedup is what you would expect. So we really get speedups due to parallel execution. There's more details in the paper. So where are we? What's the status quo? We have built this open source prototype, and it's available for everyone to download since yesterday, even for Firefox 13. We have a sequential library for people that want to just develop against our programming model and run it in other browsers. This is now an ECMAScript proposal. So the full API is published as part of an ECMAScript swarmlet. ECMA is the standards body behind JavaScript. So we are aiming to put this into the JavaScript standard. And we started looking into sequential implementation for SpiderMonkey, just to play a bit more with the API and just to see more what's possible if you embed that deeper into a JIT. These are the URLs. So go to the websites. There's more documentation, the demos, and you can try and play with yourself. Thank you. We're strict. Yeah, that's actually it's a very good question. So in our prototype, we can do that statically because the prototype limits the amount of JavaScript you can write, and we can statically detect writes to the heap. But if you do it in a full JavaScript implementation, statically detecting writes to the heap is not possible. So you need to at runtime detect if somebody writes to the global heap. Yeah.
And you would detect all writes to the heap?
To the global portion. So each thread is allowed to write to its own heap,
okay.
But it's not allowed to write to the global shared heap. You certainly could do that. The reason why we don't have that number is because we couldn't make our OpenCL implementation run single-threaded. But probably you would still see this performance gain due to the better JIT efficiency. Because the reason why we are more efficient is really that we specialize to the exact argument types of the function call, which a typical JavaScript JIT won't do. Because if you're a JavaScript JIT, you don't know whether you will regain that investment. Whereas we, as we know, there's many iterations can make that investment.